I want to talk about how to increase your ministry influence. How to increase your ministry influence. And the word influence, I think, is an interesting word because most of us, when we think about leadership, we think about this classic definition that we've all heard, that leadership is influence. And whoever you first heard that, that's sort of who you attribute it to. As far as I can tell, this goes back to the early 1900s, which excludes some of the modern day folks. But it has been making its rounds that leadership is influence. And I think that's a pretty good start of a definition of leadership. It's clearly not comprehensive enough, it's not inclusive enough, but it's not a bad start. Now, I might also argue that effective ministry, that this thing that we have been called to do, is also all about influence. And so in a way, if you think about it, ministry is influence. And that's really all that we've got. And if you've ever tried to do ministry any other way, you will very quickly realize that influence is not only the best way, but it's also probably the only effective way, because if you've ever tried to do ministry by intimidation, that doesn't work very well either. And but out of influence comes ministry by invitation, it comes ministry by imitation. And so I think this thing of influence is really interesting. So we make our living, if you will, we fulfill our calling, which is the better way to say it, and I'll finesse that a little bit more later, by influencing people. That's what we try to do. And we try to influence people through our preaching, and I do it better some days than others, but we try to influence people through our preaching. We try to influence people through our leadership. And we'll talk in some of our sessions of how leadership is not only taught, but leadership is caught, and it's caught through that level of influence. We influence people through our writing, whether it's formal writing, like writing of books, or it's a writing of what you might put in your newsletter, or what you might put on a pastor's note to your congregation, or even what you might put in an announcement, or what you might put in a letter or a quarterly giving statement. You try to influence people through your writing. Then most of us spend a lot of our time trying to influence people through meetings. And over the years, we've learned influence techniques for meetings, that you don't wait till you get to the meeting to try to influence people. You have meetings before the meetings to try to influence people so that the actual meeting will go better than if you had not had those meetings. So we're in the influence business. And today, I want to talk to you about how to increase your ministry influence. And this talk is based on a foundation, I hope, of Scripture. Because I have tried to look at what God says about influence and what God says about our calling and what God says about the unique divine appointment that He's placed on our life, but also trying to look at church history. And most of you know, and some of you are wondering if I'm ever going to get around to doing today in church history kind of stuff. And unfortunately, the only thing I could find about today in church history is that today in church history, John Wesley got really sick and he died 7 days later. And I didn't think that was very encouraging to share with you. So maybe tomorrow there's hope for what we might find in church history. But I have tried to make it a study of characters in church history, particularly post-Reformation and forward, to say, how did they influence people? Why do we still talk about them? What is their legacy? And then building on that is this incredible network that I've been a part of now for arguably, Jamie, over 10 years, that is coaching pastors. And I've seen pastors, and I've tried to look at how you exercise influence and how we use influence inside of our churches. So I hope to bring all of that to bear, even though from here on out I'll mention very little about church history, I'll mention very little about pastors that I've coached, or very little even about scriptural influencers, but just kind of know that's the underpinning. Now for me, as I've tried to clarify my calling over the years, particularly the part of my calling that is to equip pastors and coach pastors, I've narrowed my focus into this phrase, helping you abandon average. That's what I'm all about. I want to help you abandon average. And to do that, I've learned that I have to help you avoid falling below average, as well as trying to help you operate above average. So a couple of years ago, or not too long ago, actually, it hadn't even been that long, I put together a training called the Finishing Well Seminar. And the goal of that, and some of you were here, was to help you abandon average by helping you avoid the pitfalls that will trip you up or disqualify you from ministry. And I looked at that from the negative perspective of here are the 7 or 8 things that are common tripwires for pastors that lead to failure in ministry, that lead to disqualification in ministry, or lead to operating a below average ministry. Well, for this, I want to flip it and go to the other side. And I want to talk about what are those things that increase your influence? What are those things that help you stay on the positive side of average, to help you be above average? And so my goal here is to help you abandon average by increasing your influence. And I want to give you some specific steps that you can take, some of which you know but need to be reminded of, others of you may have heard of but you've never implemented, and then some that may be new to you. I want to give you steps that you can take to increase and multiply your influence, perhaps even exponentially. Easy for me to say. It's the speech impediment. Perhaps even exponentially. Now, I believe that any minister, and I hope this applies to you, I believe that any minister that is seeking to abandon average has a desire to increase their influence. And I violated already one of the key rules of introducing a topic, and that is I have no story, I have no excitement, I have no joke. But I hope I have your attention, because if we've got the right crowd in this room, that you already want to abandon average. You are already interested in operating at a higher level. You already have a desire to be an influencer. You already want to make the biggest difference possible. You want to fulfill your calling to its highest potential. You want to be the best minister that you can be. Do I have the right crowd?
Yes.
All right, if you do, let's get started. So let me give you, as a foundation to the talk, 3 truths about influence. There are more than 3, but 3 will lay the foundation as I get into my, what will be, I think, 10 ways to double your influence. Now, the problem with announcing how many you have is if you get into it and you realize you only have 8, or you get into it and you realize you have 11, you've boxed yourself in with 10. I wrote a book that went to print before it was properly edited, and I announced that there were 10 ways to do something, and many of you caught it and said, there's not 10, there's 11. I'm like, oh, how did that happen? And then 2 chapters later in that same book, I said, here are 4 ways to do something, and there were only 3. So I reserve the right for this to be 9, 10, 11. I might think of one at the break. We'll see how it goes. But I will give you these 3 as a foundation. Truth number 1 about your influence. Number 1, you are a steward of your God-given influence. So God gives us this influence, and we are to be a steward of it. You are a steward of your God-given influence. And that's my longest point, by the way. All the other points are like 3 words. So once we get past this one, you'll be okay. You are a steward of your God-given influence. So there's several things tied up in this truth. First of all, none of us as ministers have influence of our own ability. We have skills, we have gifts, we have abilities, of course, that God can use, but we are on the receiving end of God-given influence. And I am grateful that my God-given influence is greater than any influence I might be able to exert just as a creation of God. But as a minister of God, I'm given what we might think of as delegated influence. We often use that in theological circles as delegated authority. But really here, it's delegated influence. So God, who has all influence, gives us a portion of it to do His kingdom work in this world, and then we are stewards of that. And here's the second part of that. Truth number 2, if you manage your influence well, God will grow it. If you manage it well, God will grow it. So as a steward, we are to be a good manager. And all throughout the scripture, Jesus gives examples of people who managed his delegated influence or authority well, and some who didn't manage it so well. Probably the most famous passage on this is found in Matthew 25, what we commonly call the parable of the talents. Arguably, this should be called the parable of the steward, because it's really not about the money, per se, or about whatever it was they buried in the ground or doubled. It's about the person and how they handled it. And so one person is given one person is given a few, one person is given more, one person does nothing with it, one person doubles it, the other person doubles it. At the end of that, Jesus chides the person who does nothing with what they've been given, and then he praises the person who multiplies it. And at the end of that is those famous words in verse 27, I believe it is, of Matthew 25, where Jesus says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And we all want to hear that in our ministry. We all want Jesus to say that about us. Now, I love the fact that he says it to the guy who had little, who started with little, and the guy who had lot. Because I'm not the guy who has a lot. I'm the guy that has a little. But I hope I'm not going to bury it under the ground. I'm hoping that I can take what little I've been given and use it for God. Double it in the case of the parable. And I, like you, want to hear those words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." But then Jesus gives us the principle after that, where he says, "Because you have been faithful with the little, you will be given," what's the word? "More." Yeah, because you've been faithful with the little, you will be given more. And so when you manage your influence well, God will grow it. And sometimes I hear people say, "Well, I only have a little influence." Well, it doesn't matter where you start. It matters how you manage. What are you doing with what God has given you? Because if you are faithful with the little, God will give you more. And sometimes we see examples of people that we consider to be great influencers. And we say, "Well, of course they have a lot of influence. Look, you know, their dad was in ministry and they're just building on top of their father." Or, "Of course they have great influence. You know, they pastor this mega church," or whatever it is. Or, "Of course they have great influence. They have such an education," or "they have such degrees," and all of this kind of stuff. And we automatically assume that they started with more. And you know what? Maybe they did. I don't choose who has the one talent, the two talents, or the five talents. But I can tell you, wherever you start, if you manage it well, it can grow. And I didn't get to choose how many talents God has given me. You didn't get to choose how many talents God has given you. But we can choose what we do with it. And both people who use their talents well in the parable heard the phrase, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And that's ultimately who I'm responsible to. I'm responsible to God and what Jesus has given to me. And I'm responsible to be a steward of my God-given influence. And I can assure you, if you manage it well, it will grow. I actually think sometimes I'm like the one talent person. The only thing I'm different than that guy in the scripture is I didn't bury it in the ground. Now, don't get me wrong. I've tried a lot to do that. I've tried to bury things sometimes in the ground, but I can tell you it will grow. And I'll share a few stories as we go along of that. So number one, you're a steward of your God-given influence. Number two, manage your influence well and God will grow it. And then number three, just to make this point, influence precedes impact. Influence precedes impact. Influence by itself doesn't necessarily mean that there's change, there's transformation, there's impact. But it comes before all of that can happen. And I say that because just because your influence grows, you can still be unfocused, you can still be diffused. And I'm going to get to that before we wrap up. And so influence does come before impact. And then I hear a lot of pastors say, "Well, I really want to double my impact. I really want to make a bigger impact. I want to make a splash. I want to put a dent in hell." And I do too. But what comes before that is influence. And often, the way God grows you and changes you, it happens before the impact. And so people want the impact, but they don't want to have all the stuff that happens before. And I teach this all the time, that before God grows a church, he first grows a pastor. The problem is there's a gap of time between when God grows a pastor and when God grows a church. And, you know, in the parable itself, you know, the manager went away for some period of time and then came back. So God often grows you over a period of time. And then after that comes the impact. And some pastors, they're right on the edge of making the impact and they stop doing the very thing that would lead through the breakthrough. So influence precedes impact. And I want you to understand how that works. Now, as a side note, let me just sort of clarify something that is popular in our culture. And maybe if we record this and you're listening to this, you know, 20 years from now, this will no longer be an issue. But for us right now, Let me just say that influence does not equal celebrity. We live in a time where, you know, we talk a lot about celebrity. And I don't have really a personal issue with that. I think sometimes people can use their fame and use their celebrity to do some really great things. There are some people on television that are very well-known religious spokespeople, and they've actually helped my ministry. You know, they've opened up doors so that when I talk to a lost person, they say, "Is your church anything like that person?" And whoever that person is that they like on TV, my answer is, "Yes, we're exactly like that. Why don't you come on over on Sunday?" And then they show up, and I don't look like that person. I'm not as good a teacher as that person, but still the gospel works. And so thankful to that. So I'm not against any of that, and I'm not saying that you should avoid or not avoid celebrity. But I will say that it is very clear from church history that often the people you've never heard of at the time make the biggest impact. Very few of the people that we look up to now would be considered celebrities in their day. Or, and this is, I think, even more important, they are quote-unquote, and I hate doing air quotes, they are quote-unquote celebrities to a very small crowd. And I don't think that's bad. You know, to be a celebrity to a very small crowd. You know, I like to joke with young Scott that I'm an international celebrity because I was flying through the Toronto airport one time and one of you spotted me. And so because it was outside of my home, international, and you spotted me, and I think we even took a selfie together, I am now an international celebrity. And I embrace that. I embrace being known by you. I hope you embrace being known by us. And I'm fine with that. But don't confuse the two. Sometimes people are famous, but they have no influence. I mean, does a name come to mind right now to you? Not necessarily in our religious world, but in the secular world. You know, people can have famous TV shows. They can have famous reality shows. But they really have no influence because as soon as they're off the air, you know, 5 months from now, nobody's going to remember them. So even if we only have a small piece of that recognition that the big celebrities have, whatever it is that we do has eternal consequences. So would you rather do a bunch of stuff that doesn't last, or would you rather do a few things that matter for eternity? Did you catch that? I'll do the few things that matter for eternity. But know that influence comes first. God grows you, God expands your influence, there are seeds that are planted, and then over time, that will bring about impact. Maybe there's some things you can do immediately that will lead to impact, but influence often precedes impact. Now, having said that, let's move to our 10 influence multipliers. Admittedly, the first couple are rather plain, but hopefully they serve us well. Influence multipliers. And I like that phrase because, in my opinion, these are all things that if you do them, if you embrace them, they will multiply your influence. Multiply them by one, multiply them by two, maybe even 5, 10, or 100. And the first of our 10 influence multipliers is to fulfill your calling. Number one, and I wrote it this way, fulfill my calling. God has given you influence. You are to be a steward of it. And if you are to manage it well and see it grow over time and see your influence lead to impact, the foundation of that is your calling. Now, to talk about calling in this room with us means that it's a twofold calling. The foundation of your influence, of course, is your call to follow Jesus. That's really where it all starts. We're called to follow Jesus. We are Christians. We're adopted into God's family. But then we have an additional calling, which I would call the focus of our influence, and that is our call to ministry, and that we've been called to full-time vocational ministry. And we have both of those in our lives. So any person who's called to follow Christ has the foundation of influence, and if they follow Christ and obediently obey Him, they will have influence as well. But then on top of that, we have this extra calling. Not because we're better, just because we need more maybe. That is the call to ministry. And what that does is that gives focus to our influence, and it allows us to apply our influence in a certain way. So your source of influence, if you will, is the calling that God has placed upon your life. That's your God-given influence. Your God-given influence comes from the calling that God has placed on your life. This is why if you feel like you don't have all the resources you need to do all that God has called you to do, you're in good company, because you don't. God's call is what gives you the authority to do it. God's call is what gives you the power to do it. God's call is what makes up the difference between our imperfections and God's plan for our life. And I'm grateful for that. God's not dependent on me. I'm dependent on Him. So your greatest multiplier of influence is faithfulness to your calling. Your greatest multiplier of influence is faithfulness to your calling. This is true if you study through the Scripture. There is no one in Scripture that we look at as an influence multiplier that failed to fulfill their calling. There's stories, there's warnings in Scripture of people who were called, but they did not fulfill their calling. We can learn from them. You can learn a lot from failure, by the way. We were talking in our coaching network earlier this week that, you know, one of the ways to succeed in ministry is find somebody who's failed. Take them to lunch, take all the notes you can, then go do the exact opposite of whatever they did. So, you know, if you have no roadmap for what to do, you can learn from a failure, but we will admit that even though we can learn from them, they did not multiply their influence. So in Scripture, the people that we see as influential are the people who fulfilled and remained faithful to their calling. So it is with church history. Church history is littered with people who were disobedient to their calling, who failed in their calling, but the ones that we remember, the ones that were influenced, were those who were faithful. And again, faithful doesn't equal famous. Faithful doesn't equal well-known. Faithful doesn't equal easy life. Faithful doesn't mean intellectual giant. Faithful doesn't mean equipped from birth with the modern-day silver spoon in their mouth or whatever. Faithful means God placed a calling on their life and they did it. As you fulfill your calling, your influence will multiply. So think about your call to ministry for just a moment. I do this so often on coaching calls and coaching networks that if you didn't expect that we were going to think about our calling, you just haven't been around enough. But just think about your calling. When did God call you to ministry? What was going on around that time of your call? Some of you in here, by show of hands, how many of you knew you were called when you were in high school? Just out of curiosity. Look around the room. That's really, really interesting. That's like 30% of the room. How many of you were called before you were 30? Let me see your hands. How many of you were called after you were 30? How many of you don't know how old you are? Okay, all right, good, good. So for those who may be listening, that was about 60, 70% of the room was called before they're 30. Which, by the way, means we've got to help a lot more young people understand this call to ministry, but that's another talk for another day. And then about another 30% said they were called after age 30. It's a huge trend right now in society that people are entering ministry as a second career. And so a lot of you who are nodding your head, that's where you are. And then maybe some of the others of you are here as guests or uncertain right now what God might be calling you to do. But I think that's worth thinking about. How are we called to ministry? So I was thinking about this in relation to influence. Some of you know my story. I had the good fortune of early on, like at age 13, discovering something I was good at. This was after trying to work in my dad's business of putting auto glass in cars and breaking the glass consistently. So very quickly I realized I was not good at auto glass repair. Then I tried mowing lawns for a while, and I actually didn't think I was that bad at it. It was just really hot to do that. And then at age 13, if you've heard me tell the story, for Christmas, I asked my parents for an Atari computer. They did not give me that. They gave me a Commodore computer. Now, an Atari is a game machine. A Commodore is like a programming computer, boring kind of stuff. But I took a liking to it and actually found I had quite a knack for it. And within a few months, I submitted a computer program and won a prize for that program. And I very quickly realized that writing computer programs and getting paid for that was much easier than mowing lawns and getting paid for that. So I became kind of addicted to this little machine that in those days you had to hook up to your TV. All right, that's what computers were back then. And then I grew in that computer business and had a successful little business. In fact, some of you know I was given some awards for my early entrepreneurial efforts. And I went to school on a full scholarship to engineering. I started early and started that summer. I was offered internships at places today that are still very well known for computers like IBM and things like that. And I think back on that, and I was speaking the other week in Silicon Valley. And just as I woke up that morning to go down and do my event that day, I thought, I wonder if I would have ended up here had God not called me to ministry. You know, is this where I would have kind of somehow or another, you know, made my way out here? And I think, and I think I would have probably had some influence in that world. Except God interrupted my life and he placed this calling to ministry on my life. Now, some people gave up a lot to go into ministry. I had a lot, but I didn't see it as giving up a whole lot to go into ministry. I did back then, and I do today, see the call to ministry as the highest calling that you can have on your life. Somebody jokingly said the other day, you should run for election. I'm like, don't put that curse on me, Ricky Bobby, but nonetheless, okay? Even if you ran for election and you won the highest office in the land, I'm not going to make any jokes. Just going to let it sit right there. That would be a demotion if God has called you to ministry. Because this is the highest calling. It doesn't mean we're better in any way than anybody else. It just means that from God's perspective, In the potential that we have to change things for eternity, there is no higher calling. And I've messed up a lot in fulfilling God's call. I've made a lot of missteps, mistakes, things I would do differently if I could go back. But I can say that by answering God's call, I found myself in the middle of God's will, and somewhere in the middle of that has been my circle of influence. And I would say to you that when you live in your calling, in God's will for your life, that is where your influence will be the greatest. It's right there. Now, that may be a reminder for some of you, and you just needed to hear that. Stay with your calling. Fulfill your calling. It's not a call to ease. It's a call to difficulty. It's a call to warfare, spiritual warfare. But it is the highest calling that God can place on your life. And if God has called you, I believe he's called you for a lifetime. I believe he's called you to ministry. So for some of you, just be reminded of that. You're in good shape. Ministry's tough, but you're okay. Some of you may have come today and you may have thought this is sort of my last ditch effort. And you know, if this doesn't work out this week, then I'm going to go back to doing something. I'm going to go back to Egypt. Or in my life, I'm going to go back to Silicon Valley. I don't think they're going to hire me to be the president of Apple, so I guess I'll just continue to do what... No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't take that either. That would be a demotion to do that. But maybe God brought you here because you've been on the edge about your calling, and right now is just a moment that God has for you to renew your calling. Or just one more. Maybe you came and you're not really sure. You find yourself in a church job, but you're not sure if it is a calling. And perhaps just even in these couple of moments, right here in this room, God sort of pointed at you and saying, yes, ministry. Yes, this is the calling. If so, welcome to the family. Welcome to those of us who have been called to do ministry. Calling to ministry, fulfill your calling. It's your greatest source of influence. That's number one. So if you want to multiply your calling, number one, fulfill your calling or fulfill my calling. If you want to multiply your influence, number two, invest in myself. Invest in yourself. Invest in myself is how I wrote it down in my notes. If I want to multiply my influence, I have to fulfill my calling. I also have to invest in myself. Unfortunately, when you're called to ministry, And you've been given this assignment for ministry. God doesn't immediately give you everything that you need to fulfill that calling. You have to gather it as you go along. You have to equip yourself as you go along. You have to grow as you go along. Now, I wish at age 18, when God called me into ministry, that He would have given me all the skills that I would have needed for the rest of my life. But that was not the case. I mean, I knew how to program a computer. I didn't know how to exegete a Bible text. Okay, two different skills, by the way, in case you're wondering. So I had to learn that. I had to grow. And sometimes I think I have been equipped for the next task that God has called me. Other times I've had to learn in the moment. I've had to have real-time training. But that's the way this works. That God doesn't give you everything that you need to fulfill your calling when He calls you, but He will provide it for you along the way if you're willing to ask, if you're willing to seek, if you're willing to knock and gather as you go along. And so many of you know I constantly pray this prayer. Lord, make me into the pastor I need to be to lead my church over this next year. Because I'm not that person. I mean, the person I am now is not the person I need to be to lead our church this December, a year from now, or next February, a year from now, or next Easter, you know, a year and a half from now. I have to grow. And so I have to invest in myself. And when you invest in yourself, when you invest in your own personal growth, this isn't being selfish. So I want you to get past that. Sometimes pastors feel like, well, if I take time for myself or if I take time away from, you know, my ministry field like you're doing here this week, somehow or another you feel guilty about that. Investing in yourself isn't being selfish, it's being a good steward. Because remember, God has called you to steward your influence. God has called you to gain these skills that you need to do. And God's plan to grow you is a strategic process of moving you from where He found you to where He wants you to be so that you can fulfill this calling He has on your life. And so, to say it rather directly, education, if you will, is connected to influence. And proper education, if you will, and I want to finesse that, nuance that, proper education is an influence multiplier. Just to be clear, notice I said proper education, not formal education. I'm not against formal education. I have one. I've got the master's degree. My doctoral advisor is going to be speaking this afternoon. So I'm not against formal education. But proper education for this thing that we do in ministry goes well beyond what you might learn in Bible college or what you might learn in seminary. That may give you a good foundation, but as many of you have heard me say, it's the books you read after seminary that are really going to help you. So you've got to invest in yourself. You've got to figure out a path for proper education, whether that's self-education or whatever that might be. You've got to invest in yourself. So let me give you what I consider the three best investments you can make in yourself. The three best investments you can make in yourself, and if I cover this with enough time left, I'll give you what I consider the three worst. The best investment you can make in yourself, number one, is books. Books. Books are powerful tools. Books are really amazing in their design. Now, as ministers, we're called, of course, to be people of a book. This wonderful, marvelous book that is above all others, the Word of God. And I don't want to take anything away from Bible study and your time in the Scripture. But assuming that we're all in agreement on the Bible as the foundation, I would encourage you to add additional books into your reading list. You know, if you read the Bible in a year, you read 66 books. People say, how do you read so much? Well, I read the Bible twice. That's like 112. Right there. So how many books did you read last year? 200. Well, it was the Bible twice and then these others. It's not exactly how it works. But for a few dollars, you can invest, for a few books, you can make a big investment. In fact, what I love about books is really how cheap they are for what you get. You know, books have gotten cheaper in my lifetime. Like with electronic books and, you know, selling books online and all of that stuff. I mean, when I first went in ministry, if you wanted a book, it was $22.95. Now they have the audacity on Amazon to sell my books for $9.99. I mean, how dare, $9.99? I spent like a whole year writing that thing. I've got scars from that book. And you want to sell it for $9.99? Well, here's the thing. You're not paying $9.99 for what you learned from the book. You're paying $9.99 for them to deliver the book to you. That's the shipping cost. That's the packaging cost. And here's what I love about books. For a few dollars, you get thousands of dollars of insight. So it's really like the cheapest education that you can possibly get when it comes to books. So make the investment in yourself and be a reader of books. All leaders, you've heard it, all leaders are readers. That can be proven. The Apostle Paul, when he was in prison, he said to young Timothy, bring my books. Bring my books. He also said, bring a coat. Just, you know, practical. It's cold, I guess. So, but that didn't really fit my schema here today of what I'm teaching. So, but invest in books. So as you think about your plan over the next year, what's your reading plan? What's your reading goals? I'll tell you my story with books and another influence multiplier later. But, you know, I've got a reading goal for this year, books I want to read. Now, the problem right now with my goal is yesterday, three of you brought me a book. So I really appreciate that. I looked through some of those last night, but now I've like got more books. And so I got to adjust that because you brought me some books this week. Maybe you were trying to help me. You know, hey, you need to read this. Like somebody gave me a book called How to Communicate to a Crowd. I'm like, well, not sure what you're trying to say here. This is really intimidating, by the way. If you've never done this, you know, like at the break, come set up here and just look. It's quite intimidating because most of my communication is done in my little coaching cave, which is about like the size of this room. And I've got like my picture of Spurgeon on the wall, my little microphone. I don't have to look at you. So books are important. So what's your reading goal? Have some, you know, set a goal. Maybe your goal is to read 12 books a year. That's what we read in senior pastor coaching. Maybe it's to read 24 books a year. Now you're reading, you know, two a month. Maybe it's to read a book a week. But books multiply your influence. And they're one of the ways that God grows you. In fact, let me just share a little bit of my love of books. This wasn't even in my notes, but I'll share it with you. Most of us can remember powerful books that we've read. Like there was a very, very powerful book that I read in 1995. And some of you know later, I actually went to work and served as a pastor on this guy's staff. I remember where I was sitting when I read that book. I mean, I was at a Baptist conference center on the coast of North Carolina, sitting on the porch of that conference center reading that book. And I mean, that book just opened my eyes to everything. Powerful kind of insights that I just couldn't imagine. You know, I can remember right after being a pastor of The Journey, I was struggling with the staffing thing. And how do you invest in staff? How do you manage staff? How do you grow staff? And I just went and bought every book I could possibly buy on staff. Because that's like how I do it. I just go buy like everything, you know, and just read it. And if I don't believe you have to read a book from start to finish, you just get out of the book what you need. And if I can get four or five ideas out of a book, then I count that as success. I just read all that. So now when I walk past my library, and I have a pretty big library. I haven't read all the books in my library, but I just feel smarter walking past it. And you know, so I got like a whole shelf there of just like staffing books. And like I remember that, you know, and I'm still reading staffing books because I, you know, it keeps changing and finessing. Remember when I was struggling with getting everything done, I just went and bought all the books on time management that I could possibly buy. And I've heard my time management thing, you know, I read a book one time called The 90-Minute Hour. Don't look for it. It's a terrible book, but it's a great title. In fact, Scott was joking this week. We were driving up, and he's like, you had ripped off a book cover and had it posted up by your desk. What's the deal with that? I'm like, the only thing I got out of the book was the title. The title was really good. If you're curious, by the way, the title of that book was called Your Opinion of Me is None of My Business. The only thing I got out of the book was the title. I ripped it off. I put it up. So we'll talk about criticism tomorrow morning. And but yeah, I got this book that I. So here's what I'm saying with that. Whatever issue you are dealing with right now, chances are really good somebody has written about it. I mean, this is available to you for like $9.99. You know, you can go get it, and they're influence multipliers. Who you are 5 years from now, in many ways, is dependent on the books that you read. And I think it's books. I think it's books. Not blog posts, not tweets, not 140 characters, not comments on the Facebook. Books. Because we had this conversation in Advanced Coaching just this week. Anybody can post anything out on the internet. I love it. I mean, I'm all for it. Post whatever you want. But don't believe it. But books are still edited. Books are still filtered. There's generally like a group of people that say, this is good and this is not so good. I was going to use two initials, but I'm trying to do the tongue-pierced 30-day cursing thing, so I don't even want to do initials. But nobody calls BS on a blog. Nobody calls that on social media. But generally speaking, for it to make it into a book form, somebody has said this is filtered. And then also the thought process. I mean, it amazes me that some very smart people in our world, you know, they say stupid stuff like on their blog because there's no filter. You know, with a book, you got to like at least think about it. And it takes a little while to be published so you can recant before it ever like makes it in print. So books are really, really powerful. And this is not just me, by the way. Steve Reynolds sent me something the other day where a lot of business people and all that, they're rebelling against, you know, some of that more quick read kind of stuff, some of the more online kind of tools for reading, and they're moving back to physical books. And I like that. So books are an investment you make in yourself. Second investment that you make in yourself, and don't feel selfish doing it because it's about stewardship and it's about being strategic, is conferences. Going to a place where you can be on the balcony, as I teach in coaching, and get away from your ministry setting and receive either from the speakers at the conference, from the program of the conference, or from the people that you meet at the conference, insight and input into your ministry. And when you come to a conference for a few hours that you invest in that conference, you might walk away with years of insight. Like what might have taken you years to gather or years to learn or even years to filter through all the books, you come to a conference and somebody does that for you. Somebody speaks into your life. And then as much as things are moving online, and I like it. I mean, I'm able to do coaching and sit in my coaching cave and I mean, coach pastors around the world. It's a phenomenal world that we live in. And, you know, we're here in a pretty good-sized room. But, you know, if I wanted to go online, we could multiply this, you know, 5, 10, 15 times through the internet. But there's something about still being in the room. There's something about still coming live. There's something about what that does for you. When I'm coaching sometimes in my little coaching cave with my picture of Spurgeon and my front cover of the book that says, "Your opinion is none of my business," and I've got my little microphone, I sometimes drift off and I think, I wonder what's going on the other end of this microphone. You know, and so I think most of you are pretty engaged and you're taking notes and you've got your blueprint and all that, but I always like have this image of like, you know, I'm squeezed up into some little corner of somebody's laptop, you know, and they've got like their email open. They've got like their social media open. You know, they're playing Candy Crush Saga or something like that. And then, you know, like the dog's coming in and out with it. You know, the phone's ringing, their cell phone's buzzing. And I'm thinking, that ain't the same as coming here. It ain't the same as being in an environment. It ain't the same as pulling aside, you know, which is what Jesus did. Pulled away. I'm sure if he could have gone to a conference like this, he would have. But we'd let him lead if he shows up. But, you know, there's something about conferences in a few hours. And they can be long, like this one, which is 3 days. Or they can be short, just a few hours. But, you know, you can learn a lot. And you learn when you go to a conference, not only from the speakers that are there, but also from one another. And I hope you'll take advantage of that this week and learn from one another. Learn from each other. And then also, listen to God while you're here. And I will hear this next week after this conference. I came last week to the Renegade Pastors Conference dealing with this issue, and it is an issue that no speaker will address. It is an issue that I won't even touch. It's not even something we even thought about at this conference. But God will speak to you about it because you're here. How in the world can that be? It's because God needed to get your attention. God needed to get you to turn off your cell phone for a few minutes. Close the Candy Crush jelly thing and focus for just a few minutes at a conference. Then another audio or another tool that you can use investing in yourself is audios. So books, conference, audios, not necessarily in that order, but audios are pretty interesting. I have a general belief that pastors are generally auditory learners. People learn in one of three ways. They learn visually, they learn auditorily, and they learn kinesthetically. We all learn in all three of those, but a lot of times just because we are preachers and we've been called to preach, we learn with audio. That's why I don't feel a lot of desire or need to razzle-dazzle you with video screens, which I think are hidden over here behind that thing, or PowerPoint or things like that. But also what I like about audios is it's so portable. You know, it's hard to watch a DVD when you're out walking around the neighborhood. I mean, I see people try it. You know, they're out doing it. I was teaching in New York City the other day, and I've always sort of felt sorry for dogs in New York since cell phones have been invented. Because when I first moved to New York City in 2001, if somebody was out walking their dog, they didn't have a cell phone with them. They were like talking to the dog, walking the dog, you know, out playing with the dog. And then now, like you fast forward, you know, 15 years later, nobody pays attention to their dog anymore. They're on their cell phone. And I see them out there, like, you know, 6:30 in the morning. I'm thinking, who's up? Like, who are you talking to? All that stuff. And I realize they're talking to, like, other people walking their dog. That's what they're doing. They're like, how's your dog doing? Oh, he's doing great. Did you bring an extra bag? Yeah, I have an extra bag, you know. And I'm like, they have to be talking to each other. And then I'm like, these poor neglected dogs. Because nobody just, like, pays attention to the dog. They gotta, like, talk on their phone. Where was I going with that? You know, but then, like, I also see this, like, people are trying to watch, like, The Walking Dead while they're walking their dog. And then they're like The Walking Dead walking their dog while watching The Walking Dead. It's so bad they've had to put, like, little signs at the crosswalks that says, look up. This is true. They're having to put these signs because people are just walking into the street. So, you know, videos are just not all that portable. And with all due respect to your dog, when you're walking your dog, I think it is okay to listen to something. And when you're out walking through the neighborhood or you're out running around the block like I'm trying to do every morning to keep, you know, my health in good shape, you can listen to something. When you're driving to a hospital visit, you can be listening to something good. And as much as I love country music, and you know I do, and I'll try to work it into some talks a little bit later, I mean, you know, a little bit of country music, a lot of good audio. You know, so listen to good audio driving to the hospital. Listen to classic country coming back. So listen to it in reverse, your dog comes back. Anyway, that's a whole other joke that some of you know. But here's the thing. A few idle minutes can be powerful learning time for you. And, you know, most of you know, I'm a fanatic about this. You don't have to be as fanatical as I am. You know, my long-suffering assistants, they speed up the audio for me. I've now found they don't even have to do that. They just download it, and I've got this app on my phone that does it. Like, it just speeds it up. So when I listen to a sermon, I listen to it at 135%. If, you know, if it's like R.C. Sproul, it's like 200%. So you got to do it a little faster on some people than others. But, you know, I listen to a 60-minute audio, listen to it in 45 minutes. You know, you can find it's pretty cool. So I'm kind of into this stuff of audio. But these are investments that you make. So you read these books, you go to the conference, you get audios. You know, books you can read all the time, audios you can listen to all the time, conferences you can make part of your overall yearly calendar. But this is proper education. And nothing wrong with formal education. But for most of us, we're not going back to seminary. We're not going back to school. In fact, I actually have a beef with people who leave my coaching network to go back and get their degree. You'd be better off staying in the coaching network, I promise you. You'll learn more about how to pastor a church. Seminary teaches you to grow a church to 100. After that, you have to go to seminars and coaching networks and conferences. So, you know, nothing wrong with that. Real quick, the three worst investments in yourself, just if you're curious. Number one is talk radio. Don't bother. I know some people sometimes that they can't think so clearly in putting together their sermons because they're always listening to talk radio. And people have, seems to me, one of two addictions. I had a guy on my staff like this one time. He couldn't get anything done because he had sports radio playing in the background, everything he was doing. And sports radio, God bless them, and same thing with talk radio, they're really good at what they do. Like when I listen to those guys, they're really good at keeping your attention for hours at a time. But at the end of the day, is that really helpful? So turn off the talk radio. It's not going to help you. You know, somebody will tell you what happens. You don't have to watch the news. You know, I've been here all week. I haven't even turned the TV on. People will just tell me what happened. You know, somebody's telling me about this Apple lawsuit walking down today. Hey, great. I didn't even have to watch the news. You know, you just tell me. And so, you know, something bad goes wrong, they'll tell us, and we'll figure it out. So just, you know, turn that off. You can live. You know, it's that old thing about you've all got people in your church who say, I can't memorize scripture, but they can tell you who won the 1973 World Series. So it's all about what you listen to. So turn off the talk radio. I'm not talking about the religious radio. That's fine. I don't listen to religious radio. I just download the sermons and speed them up and listen to them as audio. So I don't have time for all of that. Sorry, Chuck Swindoll, Chuck's friend. All right, talk radio. Number two, stay off the social media. Social media is one of the worst investments you can make in yourself. I think we're doing something later with social media. So with apologies to our team. Other than what our team is going to tell you to do at this conference. stay off the social media. Now, a limited diet may be okay. You know, so if on your, you know, one day a week you want to go on there for like 15 minutes or whatever, that's okay. But most of us don't have the discipline to limit it to 15 minutes. I mean, if you don't believe me, like set your countdown, you know, for like 15 minutes and then just like this block of time that is, it's like a time vampire, you know, the social media stuff. And, you know, you get on there and I always feel bad after I get off Facebook. Because apparently you never have a problem. Because when I read your Facebook, it's all like smiles and puppy dogs and happy stuff. And I mean, you're like so great and my life sucks. And I see how good you are and it reminds me of how sorry I am. Because here's the thing, nobody posts the worst day of their life on social media. Nobody posts the day they didn't baptize anybody. Nobody posts the lowest attendance they had at their church. I'm just telling you. So you are actually getting a false impression. And here's the other thing. Anybody can look good on social media. You know? All right. And avoid the comments. Like, why are you even bothering? Like, somebody posts something, you disagree with it, get in there and write a little comment. Don't bother. It ain't going to make a difference anyway. And, you know, then don't get into arguments on this. It's just a waste of your time. Some of you have it pops up on your phone. Like, if somebody likes something you posted or they comment on something you posted. Right now, some of you have comments that people have made on your social media and you can't focus in here because you can't wait to pop it open on your phone. There was a study that was done recently by a Fortune 500 organization. They paid their employees to uninstall the social media apps. They said it was better for us to pay them to do it than to deal with the loss of work that they're doing it. And then, like, why would you have that turned on? I don't have that turned on. I turn all that stuff off. And then number three, the worst investment you can make is just what I'm going to categorize as trivial pursuits. And let me try to explain that. Not the game. I'm sure the game is just fine. Is it still around anymore? Trivial Pursuit? Yeah. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, as pastors, sometimes we get caught up in learning about something that is never going to be anywhere related to anything else that we do. So I guess the thing I would say on that is, you know, it's okay to follow sports a little bit, but if you're being like a sports fanatic, you probably are hurting the time that you could use in better ways. You know, it's okay to follow politics a little bit. And I love, like, the convention times and the speeches. And, you know, and I enjoy, like, trying to figure out the leadership things on that. But to be a political junkie and be able to fulfill your calling as a pastor is probably at odds. You know, I love history in general. And there are some things that happen in history that are just extremely interesting to me. but they're historical, but not related to church. Do you see what I'm saying? Now, there's nothing wrong with reading about those things, or like, you know, if I'm relaxing and the documentary comes on, the History Channel, about that. But other than just a few minor points that I might be able to pull away, that's not the best way I could spend my time. So given a choice of reading a church history book or reading another book about, you know, the people that lived in the underground during the London bombing of the, you know, Blitzkrieg or whatever, I don't know. It seems like I shouldn't be pursuing all of that stuff. So what I find is sometimes pastors read stuff and they engage stuff that requires massive amounts of time, but its intersection with your key focus areas is slim at best and non-existent at worst. And I think sometimes this can become a distraction to you. You know, it's like I'm telling you, if you shut down all of your social media stuff, you'd be able to read more books. I guarantee you. You know, and I'm not against like watching television. I think, you know, it can be used to relax. There's something with that, reading a fiction book from time to time. I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. I'm talking about like minor stuff. I'm talking about when you become a fanatic about something that just really isn't in line with your proper calling, trivial pursuits. Let that be whatever you want it to be. Number two, invest in myself. Number one, fulfill my calling. Number three, manage my energy. Manage my energy. One of the ways that you can multiply your influence is you can manage your energy.